Kona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for Satsang tonight. We'll go ahead and get started and get this thing rolling, huh? I'm Shusato Kono Kumara, and I'm joined tonight by PLAN, Linda, Megan, and Tim. We're pleased to be with you. Go ahead, take a deep breath, and let's get started. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, in the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one shaft to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And I place myself in service along with PLAN to all of you listening tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. We have a longer meditation song for the end of the evening tonight, so I want to get right to it. All right. PLAN, you have anything you want to say before we get started?
No.
Nothing? Do you think there's anything worth getting into tonight concerning what we just did during our physical session here?
I think what we spoke about is huge. Wisdom versus knowledge and what wisdom brings.
Okay, so you think we should do that? Y'all agree? Want to hear it again? Okay. All right, so we started satsang here in Charlotte tonight with me talking to the group about wisdom versus knowledge. And I started just by asking everybody, you know, what's the difference? And Pielian spoke up and said that knowledge is... Well, why don't you tell us what you said, Pielian?
I said that knowledge is intelligence and wisdom is from experience.
Right. So that's very, very aptly put. I only tweaked it a little bit just because you can go through an entire lifetime gaining wisdom of the world, but not necessarily being wise in a spiritual higher consciousness sense. And anyone who can, you know, like old people are wise because they've had a lifetime of experience. So when it comes to how this world functions, they do have a level of wisdom that would transcend that of a younger person, certainly. And what the reason that I brought it up specifically was because as seekers, we're all being called to develop our wisdom here in form, but wisdom from a higher place. And the only way to move from the level of fallen consciousness, the level of the personal self, into the space of true wisdom is through experience. And it brings up a thing that is so important to your work and your life. And how you, you know, how you view it is just so key to your work. So we'll jump into that a little bit. The thing that happens with seekers, and I know I've kind of talked about this before, it's like a lot of people begin this level of work as an escape tactic, I'll call it. So a lot of them have had very difficult situations in life, and they've tried, you know, traditional religion has failed them, and then maybe they got into other forms of spiritual worship or study, and each time they kind of learn whatever it is that was there for them to learn, and then they reach their kind of saturation point with that level of teaching, and then it's time to move on. And what they find over the course of, you know, many years oftentimes is that each time they reach the end of it, they're still left with this same kind of void that sits there. And so the question that keeps moving them forward never seems to be answered, I guess, for lack of a better word. And ultimately, they end up here with me, or, you know, with a teacher who does very similar work. And the thing is that what they come in with is this desire to escape all of the harshness of life. And that is just not where the work happens. The work happens when you recognize and surrender to the fact that the harshness of life is going to happen. And it's how we view that, those experiences and what we do with those experiences that makes all the difference. So we don't go into dissolution work because the desire is to escape polarized consciousness, or the desire is to escape the world, or the desire is to ascend, or the desire is enlightenment. Now, of course, those desires, you know, there's a caveat here, because those desires have to be in place in order for you even to end up here, right? Because if those weren't even there, you wouldn't be here. However, there's a point at which those have to fall away. And now you're doing the work for the sake of the work. And what you recognize is that you're actually here to embrace life, not to push it away or run away from it or deny it. And when a seeker moves to that level, it's a beautiful thing, because now the real work and the real you know, movement in their consciousness is ready to happen. You can be a seeker who has all the understandings in the world concerning how the mind works and polarized consciousness, and how all the positives came out of the negatives, and that this is a, you know, like a shadow reality, and this reality is built out of the negative, and you can have all of it in place. But at the end of the day, if you have something that happens to you in your world that is quote unquote bad, the way you would perceive it, and you function from that level with it, you're missing the point. And it will stunt your growth. You won't be able to move any further. Because you have to be able to move into the spot where you accept the challenge of whatever that experience is bringing you. And you accept it from the place where you know that you are going to walk into it and walk through it from your levels, your level of understanding. Okay? And that's the point. It's not, you know, something bad happens in your world and it turns into a big pity party. Poor me, it shouldn't have happened and I screwed it up and blah, blah, blah. No, that's just not the point of your existence. Your existence is to move into ever-increasing levels of consciousness, right? And in order to do that, you have to move past that whole personal self place. And in order for your experience to turn into true wisdom, you have to be able to do that. So the first thing that everyone needs to do is to stop viewing the things that happen in the world that aren't what you want to happen as a bad thing. And it sounds like so obvious, but yet that's what the mind wants to do with all of it. Because let's face it, the mind is trying so hard to create a world where everything is just hunky-dory the vast majority of the time. And it works really hard to hold it all in place. Like, it struggles to get this one piece. So let's say that an unmet need is companionship. So someone struggles really hard to find a boyfriend or a girlfriend, right? They don't feel right when they're alone. So they keep looking, they keep looking, they keep looking. Well, so they find someone. Now what they're going to do is struggle really hard to hold on to them, even if they begin to witness that that person really does not suit them, or that that person has stuff going on in their own world, in their own life, that is actually counterproductive to their own life. See, their sense of what they need to hold on to is going to kind of undermine what they're even seeing. So they'll kind of pretend the stuff that they're seeing isn't actually happening, or they'll justify it away. They'll say, oh, he's just having a bad day or whatever, right? Let's say the guy's got anger issues, and which of course comes from him, you know, experiencing deep pain and holding on to all that. And so she'll be out with her boyfriend and some other friends and something will happen and he'll fly off the handle and yell at somebody, some stranger or whatever. And then she'll justify it away to her friends and kind of laugh it off, going, oh, you know, he had a really bad day at work today. So that happens because the reality is this is not the kind of person that this girl needs to be with, obviously. And it's put her in a place where she's acting codependent. Not a good thing for anybody. But that's exactly what the mind would have you do, because what it wants at all costs in this example is it wants the companionship, right? So if the companionship part is, you know, for most people, if it's positive more than it's negative, or if it's, you know, whatever someone will tolerate. For some people, it's like 50-50. Some people will tolerate 20% positive and the rest negative, you know, and they'll just stay in that because it's safe and they're getting their 20%. And for some people, that's enough. But when you look at the bigger picture, I mean, how sad that you would think so little of yourself, that you would accept 20% happiness and 80% shame or 80% pain, 80% disappointment, 80% embarrassment. Yeah. And so a lot of what we deal with is, you know, people and their experience of low self-esteem. And so because their esteem is so low, they allow all these things to continue to go on. When someone from the outside could look at the situation and be very clear, they'd be like, what on earth are you doing with that person? Why would you want to be with someone who's like that, right? So until you can move into a space where you're really willing to look, You're never going to move past it, and you'll never experience the wisdom that will come on the other side of that. So when that girl is ready, and when she really goes in and starts looking very honestly at the relationship and what's going on that undermines the relationship and where that's coming from and where it's self-generated and where it's generated from the other person, right? And gets very real about the whole thing. Now there's an opportunity for wisdom, because now she can take steps to remedy the situation, right? Maybe that means, confronting the person, giving an ultimatum, like setting your boundaries and saying, I will not accept anything less than this, and I mean it. And then you hold to it, right? And maybe through doing that, the guy on the other side does make actual life changes, right? That's a beautiful thing. And so you learned something. You learned what it took to enable him to actually make change. Because let's face it, if you hadn't done that, he didn't have anything motivating him to change, right? Or maybe he wasn't willing to make the change, and so you broke up. Is it bad that you broke up? No. And I promise you, you will be wiser for it going into your next relationship, having walked through that, right? Now you're going to look for the little signs that might be there that would point to him having anger issues. And you'll recognize when something happens and you move into a space where you want to justify it. And you start to feel the energy that's in there, that your internal check, right? Because it's there. It's always there. I don't care how unconscious you are. The internal check is always there. It's called your conscience, and it is divine. And your conscience will notify you when something happens that is not okay with you. It can be really subtle, but it's there, right? So now, through your experience, you become more aware of that little internal signal, right? That's moving into wisdom. And then once you move through that space and now you have it for yourself, now you actually, it enables you to be in a place where you can be of assistance to others who deal with the same things. You see? Because you've walked it. You own it. As a guide, that's what we have to do. We've walked the path, right? I can't read a book and become a guide. It just doesn't work that way. Because the experience isn't mine, it's someone else's. And until it's mine, there's no power behind it. And all I have is my experience. That's why if you're with a guide who's qualified, you will see major shifting taking place, because when you're in the presence of the guide and that's what they're teaching or that's what they're sharing is their own experience, there's a lot of power behind it, you see, because they own it. Whereas someone who took a course or read a book or did a workshop and then walk away trying to teach it, or people who are teaching other people's work, it just isn't effective. Now, it can be effective on the level of intellectual understanding or knowledge, intellectual knowledge, you know. But you can't take someone else's work and teach their work effectively unless it has become your work, because you've walked it and you've experienced all of it. And at that level, it's no one's work, you know, because experience is experience. And everybody, when you have your revelations, they're all the revelations. Divine revelation is the same thing. It doesn't matter what system it comes through or whose mouth it comes through. Or, it doesn't matter. When you have the experience, you could talk to anybody in the world who has had the same experience, and it wouldn't matter where they were from or what they were taught or what, you know, spiritual tradition they follow. The experience is the same thing. It's universal, right? It was beautiful. There was a point where someone made a comment to my guide the fact that I was doing the work I was doing and said, well, aren't you upset that she's teaching your work? And my guide laughed, you know, like, what do you mean my work? What do you mean my work? Because isn't that the point? Is it true that the work that I do comes through the lineage that my guide taught me? Yes. Am I teaching you anything I have not personally walked and experienced myself? No. I can't. How could I? See, so it's not her work, and this isn't my work either. This is the work, right? And that's the difference. You hear people standing around talking about, you know, oh, like talking about whoever the spiritual teacher is. And so they say this and they say that. And now they're taking on their teachings and making them their own. So now they're talking to you from a space of like, I'm teaching you what you should do. There's no power in that. And it's what it actually is the mind creates a false sense of enlightenment within that, taking on someone else's work. And the mind will actually convince itself that it's got it. Like, it's mine now. Because I read that and I understood it. So now, like, it's mine. Hardly. So if you hear people standing around doing that, well, that gives you an indication of where they're actually functioning from. There's a reason that I don't sit around teaching the works of Vivekananda, or I don't sit around teaching what Yogananda taught. Not because what they did wasn't priceless, because it was absolutely priceless, but their walk was their walk, right? And my walk is my walk. So my stories are different. But what's beneath them is the same thing, right? So in the way that I do my work, it looks a little different, and it needs to, because there are certain people who are supposed to hear my teachings. You know, I had a beautiful email from a listener, an absolutely beautiful email. It was very complimentary to the work that we're doing here. And, you know, he said, thank you for being so human about it. And I cried. I just sat there crying, because it was the most beautiful compliment I could have received, because that was always my desire. My desire was never to be the teacher who comes in from this very lofty place, right? So like, if you've been to college, I'm sure you had a college professor at some point who like was so intellectual, they were just so far above everybody that you just couldn't relate to them, you know? I mean, you could get the information, but you didn't relate to them. And the way I always felt was that my job was to be a bridge, you know, a bridge from the worldly level of the mind and higher mind, that something has to help move people from one into the other. So to be human about it is like the most beautiful compliment. But that's not how all teachers are, because some teachers come in from very lofty places. And that's beautiful. Right? Because the people who will be attracted to them are the people who need that. They need the lofty teacher, you know? They need the Sai Baba, right? The avatar in form to be their guru. But the people that seem to find me and the people who find my guide, as I did, there are people who need someone real, you know, to see that, wow, there's, you know, it's true. Christ does walk the earth and look normal, you know. Christ comes in all shapes and sizes and forms, and you know, from the outside, it looks like all kinds of different personalities too. How did I get from wisdom into that? I don't know where I was going with that. But this is why you're here, right? You're here to master it here, not to escape it. To master it. And you will do it through your life experience. Remember, you cannot compartmentalize your spiritual life from the rest of your life because your entire life is spiritual. Every single moment of it is spiritual because you are spirit. As is your entire reality. You know, it's all your own projection, but it is all spirit. So there's nothing going on that's not spiritual. Right? And it's only the mind that wants to polarize that and turn it into something where these lofty things are spiritual and these mundane things are non-spiritual. And it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, how you, if I told you that, like, how you treat a bug is just as important as how many times you said your rosary last week. Would you believe me? You know? And it is. You will swat a bug and have intent to harm and think nothing of it, but yet you'll feel guilty if you miss a rosary. Or you feel guilty if you don't go to church on Sunday. Because you have some sense that one is sacred and the other is not. And it's not true. So that's something that, you know, you can kind of look at yourself and look at where you're coming from. And sometimes I give you these things so you can, the mind, you know, loves to say, well, where do I stack up? It loves to do that. It will do that the whole way. Partially, this is why you find yourself so interested in the intellectual knowledge, right? Because really what's going on is, like, you just always want a barometer for where you're at. Like, I have a goal, so I have to keep proving to myself that I'm getting better or getting closer. I can't tell you, I'm gonna rat you out, Tim, but I can't tell you how many times Tim has made a comment around the fact of, it feels like it's getting closer. It feels like it's getting closer. And that's exactly what I would expect. Everybody's thinking it, not everybody says it. He happens to say it, right? But it's no different. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's looking at other people's experiences, and then you're gauging yourself on, oh, I had that, so it must be I'm ahead of them. I didn't have that one. Ooh, I must be doing something wrong, right? It's this constant comparison thing. Don't compare yourself to anybody. Ever, ever. You are unique, right? And everyone is. You cannot compare, like, how long you've been doing your work and the experiences that you've had with someone else who just started and it seems like they're moving faster than you did, or, you know, just save yourself the time and the wasted energy. Just know you are exactly where you need to be in any given moment, just as they are. Just as they are. And don't judge yourself either. It's kind of another level there in comparing, but the whole judging yourself when you make the mistake, right? You have a bad experience and you make the mistake and you beat yourself up. Just, you have got to stop that. Remember, the experience happened because there was something there that you needed to learn. And it was going to be learned through the experience of it. And to judge yourself concerning how you handled it is kind of, you know, negates the gift of the experience. The experience was a gift from the universe. It was saying, here, we love you. Here's another try. Here you go. Maybe this time. Maybe this time. We know you'll do it. We know you'll do it. Maybe this time. Your choice. Right? And when you don't do it, it goes, okay. Guess it just wasn't the right time. Maybe next time. And there will always be a next time. And when you do it, it goes, yay, we knew you could do it. So let's send you another one just to test you. And this is life, right? This is life. You're living in a negative based reality. You have to have the challenges if you are ever to master it. You have to. If life was hunky-dory from day one, you would never move through all the levels of initiation to the point where you do not need to come back in physical form. You just couldn't do it. You know, and I used the experience or the example of like of tough love with the group earlier to illustrate that. Tough love in its truest form is not easy to understand or to have the experience of without it being polarized. Yeah, it's one of the greatest gifts when you actually walk through having to stand on the side of being the one who's being tough because you love, right? Not from a personal place, from an impersonal, loving place. And when you have that experience and when you actually see the effects of it and you watch the change that can take place in the other person's life, the one who's on the receiving end of it, right? And you actually walk it and they walk it and you move through it together and you see on the opposite side of it how change came about for that other person because of you holding your ground, taking that stand and holding your ground. You end up in such a space of gratitude. You know, you had to have the courage to do it because it's not easy. Especially in a world where society, you know, tells us that, well, what does the Bible tell us? Love is patient. Love is kind. Right? Love is not boastful or, you know, the whole thing. Is that true? Well, sure, it's true. Well, sometimes love looks like someone who's right in your face. Because sometimes that's what you need. Right? And it doesn't have to be personal to you. Remember, the you that you're thinking is getting yelled at isn't you anyway. It's just the ego. That's not you. Never has been. And sometimes there's something outside of the ego that recognizes where the ego is playing a little game, and so it calls it on it. And that's all that's going on there. And when you can be that something, right, you coming in it and at it from a place outside of the personal self, right, and you witness what can transpire, it is the most humbling thing. And it will make you cry in gratitude. Absolutely amazing. But you'll never have the wisdom that is required if you're not willing to step up and do it, right? And the stepping up and doing it can be a very difficult thing because you'll be in resistance to it. The mind will want to resist you doing it and it will feel very uncomfortable, right? And so for the personal self, of course, if it's uncomfortable, the personal self wants to turn and run or think it can figure out another way to do it that's less painful. That's just so typical, right? It's the old, you know, like for the mind, it'd be the equivalent of saying, well, let's just peel the Band-Aid off really slowly versus ripping it off because I don't want it to hurt. And then it ends up hurting more and taking longer. And I'm sure we've all had that experience with something. I had that experience with a boyfriend decades ago, right? Knowing it was over and because I wanted to be kind, didn't want to hurt the person because I didn't dislike him or anything. I just wasn't in love with him. And so the way I went about it, I thought I was doing it for all the right reasons. And what was really going on was I was afraid of being, you know, my whole drive in my life was to be a good person. And so my fear was that, well, if I just broke it off with them, like good people don't do that. right? So I talked myself into this whole thing that, well, if I do it this way, and first I'll do this, and then maybe a week later I'll do that, you know? And then at the end of the day, he'll know we're broken up with, and I never actually had to do it. And that's so not how it worked out. What I walked away with understanding was that I made it worse on him. So here was someone I cared about, and I actually put him through more pain, ultimately, than I would have if I had just been honest, you know, 2 months earlier or whatever it was, and just said, hey, this is where I'm at, and I know it's not going to work, and we're done. It would have hurt, yeah, but boy, it'd be a whole lot easier to get over when it happens that fast rather than going through, say, 2 months of not understanding what the heck is going on and him trying to do everything he can do to fix it. And, you know, oh my gosh, it just made it so much worse. Worse for both of us. So learn things from these things, right? You learn. And the only reason that I did that is because I was chicken. And we all have to get very real about where we function from, right? I was afraid. And my fear caused someone pain unnecessarily. And that's the reality of it. And here I held myself above at the time thinking that I was, you know, kind. Please. It's ridiculous, right? It's ridiculous. And I'm sure everybody's got something like that where you can look back and see where you've kind of done something like that. Yeah. This is the beauty. I've had the experience. I walked through it. I've seen it from all the angles, right? And I can be very honest about that. So how many people walk away with an understanding of where you were a real selfish jerk, let's say, and then you feel free to tell anybody about it? Who's going to do that? Nobody does that, right? Nobody does that. But it's not personal, right? So that's what I had to see. I had to see that the personality at the time, you know, obviously hadn't done any level of this work. I was quite young. But that personality at the time was doing what she thought was the right thing to do or the best thing to do. Was it misguided? Well, sure. Did she know any better? No. Would she do it now? No. Right? Would she do it now if I hadn't done the work? Maybe. Yeah. Because maybe she'd get back into the same situation and find herself, of course, tested to see if she learned something. And then would have to make that choice. And I can't say right now if she would have made the same choice or if she would have gone, oh, gosh, this seems awful familiar. What did I do last time? It didn't work out very well. Must be this time I'm supposed to do something different. There aren't too many people out there who are that wise, right? So take all the mistakes you make. Don't beat yourself up over making them. Look at them objectively. Kind of back away from the story of it and look at it objectively and see it for what it is, right? It's a beautiful thing about this work is it doesn't take you out of reality. It puts you smack dab in the middle of reality. Remember, we always talk about, you know, the mind, what it does is it superimposes its own version of reality over what actually is. So you're walking in the illusion. Reality is right here, but you walk in an illusion. Until you get objective. So when it's not personal anymore, and the personal self is in the background, and the observer, which is objective, is the one experiencing the world, well, now you get a taste of reality, right? And you find the world isn't nearly as bad a place as you ever thought it was, because you're seeing clearly, not in a space of judgment, from a space of allowing experience. Allowing things to be as they are. Taking from them whatever it is that you can use to gain experience and to gain wisdom. It doesn't sound as frightening that way, does it? Because people think it's a scary thought of like, oh my gosh, so you're telling me like I have to like welcome all these bad things into my life. I can't do that. I mean, it's really not that big of a deal. When you really commit yourself, it's really not that big of a deal at all. At all. You know, you will move through very, very difficult periods in your life with such grace. You know, I remember when my father got sick, and he, from the time that he found out that he had cancer, it was only, I think, 4 months until he passed. And I had done, you know, a great, great deal of work before this happened. And I had the opportunity, because of the level of work I had done, to spend time with him in a place of real, true service to him that I never could have experienced, you know, had I not done this level of work, because I would have been just completely consumed by the loss or the projected loss of what I was experiencing. Now, that's not to say that the personal self didn't have its grief, because she did, right? And it was allowed, of course. I mean, you're human. You love someone and they pass, and of course you have the understandings. You know what it means. It's not real. You know they're still there, but there is a sense of loss, of course. And you're not meant to push it away and say, oh, but it's just part of the illusion, and, you know, he exists in my heart and he's still here. You know what? Until you've actually experienced that, those are just words, and they're words that take you away from the truth. And the truth in that moment is that it hurts. And the worst thing you can do is to not allow the pain to be there. You know, because when we love deeply and we experience a sense of loss, it's painful. And so you can honor the pain by allowing yourself to feel it. It will give you wisdom. No one ever became wise by repressing or denying their pain. So you let the personal self have its voice, right? But not from the space of just allowing it to go on forever and consuming you. You let it run its natural course, because believe it or not, it has a natural course. And that's the thing that people, when they get involved in this work initially, they feel like, oh my gosh, like once the pain really starts to hit them, they feel like they're going to be consumed by it and that it'll be this never-ending pit of sadness or anger. And it's not true, because when you just allow the energies to move very naturally, and you see this with children, right? A child has something happen, they get hurt, and it's like, ah, you know, I mean, it's like immediate, and they're just all upset. And even if you don't go to coddle the child, I'm talking about small children, okay? Even if you don't go to coddle the child, very naturally, it'll run its course. Once they recognize the pain's not there anymore, it's kind of like, huh, you know, and then they move past it. And then all of a sudden they're onto something different. And 5 minutes later, they're laughing and it's gone. It's just like gone, right? So that's what it is. That's what the energies do. They come in, they move through, and then they're gone. However, when you are working so diligently to not allow yourself to experience the energies, and so you repress them, and you deny them, well, guess what? They don't go. They come and then they lock in. Because you haven't allowed them to move through. See, healers, energy healers, can place their hands on a person and allow the energy of whatever it is that's wrong with that person to literally course through their body. The whole energy run right through them, right? They actually will take on the sickness and the effects, whatever part of the body it's affecting, that it literally will affect the healer. However, they don't hold on to it. They don't make it theirs by personalizing it. They allow it to do what it's going to do, and it just runs. So it runs through them, in and out. And it's done. Now, if they started personalizing with the pain, let's say someone had a problem with their, they're having issues with their stomach, and so a person's working on them, and so all of a sudden they start feeling terrible pain in their stomach. If they personalize that, now they're going to actually hold the energy, and it'll lock into them. And now they have to do the work to release it. But healers who you know what they're doing, they allow it to move through them. So they can experience and witness the pain momentarily, or maybe for hours, or maybe even days, right? But they wouldn't personalize it. And then it can just go on its own merry way and just be done. So, you know, what is it in the Bible? I can't remember if it was something Jesus said. I thought it was that something like you come to the Lord as a little child, right? And it's so true on so many different levels. The children have that innate ability before the programming kicks in, right? So we're talking about kids who are up to about the age of 5. But they have that innate ability to just be present and to just be allow the body and the voice and everything to just kind of reflect what's moving in the moment. Something amazing is going on and they squeal with excitement, you know. Something horrible happens to them and they cry their eyes out or stomp their feet or scream out loud, right? They just let it move. And then you can witness how quickly they move past it. It's beautiful. So work on that for yourself. You know, witness the things. If something comes and you recognize it just bothered you, okay, good. Get real about it. You know, before you even get involved in picking it apart to figure out the why and where it came from and all that stuff, which is necessary, just allow yourself to feel it. Be real about how much it actually bothered you. How much did it really hurt? You might say, I'm mildly annoyed. And I bet you, if you really sat with it, you'd find out it's a whole lot deeper than mild annoyance. All right. We time? Okay. I'm getting the cue. It's time to go. So I have a very special song picked out tonight, and it's longer, but it's such an amazing song. And I'm not going to give you any information on it because then your mind gets involved with it. But you're just to sit with the energy of it and ride it all the way to the end. And love you so very deeply. And thank you again for listening tonight. And we will see you next week. Good night.
You are divine.